20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packer fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am super excited about today's episode. I talked about this maybe, I don't know, 3-4 months ago, it feels like. But I said at some point, I'm going to get to watching every single snap of Jordan Love from 2023. And I couldn't wait to do it. And I was so excited to just see, now that we sort of know what we know of how well he played specifically at the end of the year, how does this season look in retrospect, going back and watching these snaps with probably a little bit different perspective, knowing what he sort of ultimately became at the end of the year? Were the initial assessments of, you know, his struggles early in the year correct? Does the end of the season look as good as we thought it did? Like, just all of it. And just to kind of see his progression through the course of the year as well. This was such a fun exercise to go through. And I'm really excited to share all of my notes from going through and watching every snap of Jordan's from this past season. Actually, this is the one I should caveat a little bit. I watched every throw of Jordan Love's. Everyone else, Josh Jacobs, everyone we've talked about, every deep dive, Bo Melton, I've watched every single snap with Jordan to make it, you know, cleaner and just a little bit. I don't need to watch every single Jordan Love handoff. I don't think anyone's really getting anything out of that. Well, maybe if you guys are upset by it, next week I can do a deep dive of every Jordan Love handoff and we'll see what we can glean from it. But I watched every single Jordan Love passing play and or plays that he scrambled on. So that's specifically what I watched. Before we get to the takeaways from the tape, let's just kind of go through remember what the grades were for this past season. His overall score was a plus 16.7 for me, my highest graded player on the team. The interesting thing is, as I was kind of going back and looking at it, his first 8 games of the year, he had a plus 0.6 grade. So it wasn't, again, I think this is sort of the overarching feel from everyone. It's not like it was bad. It's not like this was like, oh my goodness, he's got a negative 10 grade or something like that. Not the Rashid Walker trajectory, right? Where Rashid Walker had a pretty significant negative grade midway through the season. And then he still kind of ended with a negative grade, but in the second half just played awesome with a very solid positive grade. This was not that. He was kind of treading along, neutral, fine, average, solid starter. And then as the season went on, it took off. So plus 0.6 in his first 8 games, the remainder of the year. So from week 9 on, plus 16.1 grade, a huge night and day difference between that sort of first half and the second half. Again, a total grade of plus 16.7. From week 9 on, those 12 final games, he had 10 games graded in the positive and only 2 graded in the negative. The game against the Giants, and unfortunately, the game against the 49ers, where he had a negative 1.0 grade in that final game. Per PFF, he had an 83.6 grade on the season, highest grade on the Packers. I think him and Melton were basically 1 and 2, like right there. But right there is the highest graded player on the Packers. He had 3 games graded below average, which 60 is their Mendoza line. Remember, he had 3 games on the entire season only that graded below average: the Raiders game 53.0, the Giants game 58.6, and the 49ers game 54.0. And I want to say this one more time. It just goes to show you, both on my grades and on PFF's grades, there were no truly awful games. There are no games that PFF had graded in the 20s or the 30s or the 40s. Everything was 53.0 or higher. And again, 60 is sort of that average. And for me, again, final 12 games, only 2 games graded in the negative, Giants at 49ers, and there were no huge, egregious, awful scores, even throughout the entirety of the season. I think that in and of itself is a takeaway, because we had no idea, guys. We had no idea going into that year what Jordan would be. It would have been, in fact, if you would have asked me ahead of the season, I would have probably put a pretty significant amount of money down that he would have at least had one truly awful game. I mean, Aaron and Brett in their primes would usually have a game, at least, and maybe not. Aaron had very few truly awful games, but towards the end, there certainly were, and Brett certainly had those. Like, that is a tough thing to do, to go through a season, much less now 17-game season with two playoff games, a 19-game season, and truly not have an awful performance. I think that's pretty impressive from a first-time starting quarterback. PFF had him graded as the 12th best quarterback in the NFL by the end of last year. The players that they had as their top 12, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Dak Prescott, Matthew Stafford, Brock Purdy, Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Justin Herbert, and then Jordan Love. So that's where we stood from a grade standpoint at the end of last season. Let's now get into some of the key takeaways as I did go through and watch every passing snap from Jordan this past year. The first thing that I want to go over isn't necessarily a specific Jordan Love observation, but it's something I talked about a lot last year, and I want to reiterate it here because it showed up on tape again. Early on, the timing and the rhythm of the entire offense was just off. There would be plays where a receiver was open and Jordan just missed him, or Jordan would hit the receiver and the receiver would drop it, or Jordan is expecting a player to be a wide receiver, a tight end in a certain place at a certain time, and he throws it there and they're just a hair off. The timing wasn't there yet. This should have been sort of preemptively expected ahead of time, because it doesn't just happen where you have all of these young wide receivers and all of these super young tight ends and a first-time starting quarterback, and then Aaron Jones goes down and everything's just going to click amazing. It doesn't work that way. It almost can't work that way. It takes time to get into that rhythm. So there was so much of that where there were so many things that were just a hair off, but it happened a lot. And the other thing too, in the same sort of category here, is I didn't necessarily feel like the offense did a great job of getting everyone in a little bit of that rhythm to start games and to just kind of stay in that rhythm. I thought sometimes maybe the offense asked a little bit too much of Jordan, and I thought there were other times it didn't maybe necessarily ask enough. And it just felt like the lack of cohesion, the lack of these guys actually playing together in games, which is a legitimate thing. Like, these guys had never played together for the most part, other than, you know, a couple snaps maybe here and there, that Eagles game from the year before. A lot of these, and certainly that was only with like Dobbs and with Watson, because all the rookies were not a part of that. So it was going to take time for them to gel and have that cohesiveness or cohesion. And it did not happen until later in the season, but that rhythm was just not there. I mean, it was, you go watch it and like play by play, just the passing snaps, and man, it really tells you like where the offense was. And you could see that there wasn't necessarily anything early in the year that they could lean on, that they could go to, and that they felt super comfortable running. And again, I think that's totally understandable considering how many first-time players, I've said this a billion times, you know that going into the season, they were leaning on their offensive line returning and Aaron Jones at running back. And it works against Chicago great. And then Bakhtiari goes down for the season, and basically that was the end of his career in Green Bay. And Aaron Jones goes down for a significant period of time. And what you were expecting to lean on early in the year is gone. And now it's all these first-time starting players that have to try to figure it out on the fly. And it just wasn't working early. Not the way that you would kind of the way that you would expect it to, not the way that you would want it to. And it took time for them to develop that rapport and that chemistry and to get into that rhythm that they would eventually get towards later in the year. It just was not there early in the season. That being said, number two on my list here is there were absolutely early signs that things could go right for Jordan. And there were signs that things could go wrong for Jordan too, but there were big time throws. There was mobility. There were the ability to ad lib plays. We saw him have that pretty epic comeback, 18-point fourth quarter against the Saints, and lead his team to victory. There were absolutely things that you can look back on early in the season and be like, okay, like to some extent, maybe we should have seen this coming a little bit more. And I think that is, you know, sort of what got him, you know, maybe a little bit more of that confidence eventually, is that he knew in spurts or in moments that he could do some of these fantastic things, but it just wasn't happening on a consistent enough basis. But I think the fact that he saw success, he saw things that he could do, that it wasn't too big for him, that he was able to manage the high-end aspects of the game, and now it was just about consistency, I think that kind of gave him the launching pad to have that confidence later in the year. But make no mistake about it, go back and watch those first 8 games, even though they were nothing like what it was later in the season, and the early signs of maybe there being a true legitimate big-time starting quarterback were absolutely there. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me, and this is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as for those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 30 points in the first month. And what's even better, there's no credit check and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over 1 million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, getkickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 30-point increase in first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. Number three, this again is more a little bit about the Packers offense. It looks like, and it felt like through again, about the first half of the year, that there were a lot of training wheels on the offense, meaning there's a lot of screens. There's a lot of pop passes. There's a lot of just ways to try to get Jordan easy passes. Understandably, right? If you had a young first-time starting quarterback, would you not also try to get him, you know, going in any way that you could and get him some easy looks to not have to put so much on his plate? But it didn't feel like it was until later when those training wheels came off that the offense actually started to gel and again, feel a little bit more in rhythm. You could see that they were trying to, I think, make it so that Jordan maybe wouldn't lose the game early. Or that, again, I just think they kind of had training wheels on. They had the bumpers on the bowling lane. They didn't want him to make big mistakes. And I'm sure part of it was trying to get him in some sort of rhythm. But it just felt like almost they were kind of babying him and not giving him the full autonomy that he actually kind of needed. And I think, I don't know if maybe there was a conversation midway through the year of like, or just a understanding of like, all right, you've gone through this now. It's time to take the bumpers away in the lane. It's time to take the training wheels off and you got to just go and do it. But when you go back and watch it earlier in the year, they tried to water it down in my opinion, too much. And once they took the training wheels off and said, hey, just go play football, that's when things started to look a whole heck of a lot better. Number four, I thought overall, he did a pretty impressive job of avoiding turnover-worthy plays, and that got better as the season went along. There were some mistakes. There were some mistakes in clutch situations. There were mistakes where he tried to force a ball in. He had a fumble here or there. I'm not saying it was perfect, but I thought overall, he took a lot from Aaron in being risk-averse, but in all the right ways. He still would sling things in there when he had an opportunity. He would utilize the middle of the field and not be, you know, completely allergic to it. But he also took good care of the ball. And that is such a key part of playing quarterback in the modern NFL. Now, there were times in the Favre era you could get away with a 20-some interception season. Not anymore. You can't turn the ball over. It is just a death sentence in the modern NFL. I mean, it certainly didn't help you back in the day either, but teams were a little bit more loose with the ball and you had the opportunities to maybe take that ball away as well. It is so hard to get turnovers. And if you're giving them away, you're just giving up too many possessions. I thought for a first-time starting quarterback, even though, yes, he's a little bit older than your normal, or like more experienced than your normal first-time starter, I just thought he did a really great job of understanding the assignment and not giving the giving the ball up with ease. And I also think, too, some of those interceptions early in the season are necessary evils. In some way, you want your quarterback to have to figure out what balls can I fit in? What balls can I not fit in? What situation do I want to take these chances? What situation do I not want to take these chances? And I think one of the reasons he was better towards the end of the year is he sort of went through that learning curve early in the year of figuring out what he could get away with and what he could not. And so I don't necessarily even mind that, but he did a good job of it. And again, he got even better as the season went along. I don't know if you guys remember this. This is number five. When Jordan first came in, I don't think this was the first year because it was the COVID year and we didn't really get to see Jordan at all, but it was definitely starting in his second year. One of the things that Matt said about Jordan, I don't know how many times he said, he's just got to plant his foot and let it rip. Meaning, don't overthink it. Just get the ball, get in your rhythm. You know what you're doing. Now rip the ball and don't be hesitating. And as you saw him get better through the course of the year, you saw, as I mentioned, those training wheels come off a little bit more and you saw him rip the ball. And what I believe is he started to trust himself more. He saw glimpses of success and he took that and he grew through the course of the season. But it wasn't really until he trusted himself and he started to just sling that ball around the field. It was what I talked about with Sam Monson the other day of like early in the year, the ball left his hand and you didn't know kind of what was going to happen. Was it going to be incomplete? Was the throw going to be awry? Was it going to be complete? You didn't know. And by the end of the year, when he's just getting back and letting it rip, it was like every time the ball left his hands, you just sort of expected something good to happen. And that's when he really started to trust himself, trust his fundamentals, trust what he had been working on all of those years. And now just go out and do it, go out and execute. And this is not a rocket science thing, right? The more that you practice something, the more opportunity you have to develop a skill, the better you're going to be when you get in those situations. And you could tell he had the skills, he put in the time, and now he just had to go in there, trust himself, and let the ball rip. And again, that's when you started seeing the ball flow a little bit more, the offense flow a little bit more, and really Jordan Love sort of start to take off midway through the year and then follow that up through the remainder of the year. Number six, it really came as a reminder to me that he's an underrated mobile quarterback. Nobody's confusing him for Lamar. Nobody's saying he's this unbelievable athlete at the quarterback position where, you know, he's running 4.3s or something. It's very early Aaron Rodgers-esque, where he could escape the pocket when he wanted to. He could pick up first downs. He could run away. There's one play in particular. It's against the Kansas City Chiefs. And this is like the mobility that you have to have in the modern NFL. You just have to have it. And yes, if you're a Tom Brady, a Drew Brees, and somebody that's really good at navigating the small area within the pocket, maybe you can get away with it still. But the play in question, or the play I'm talking about here, is against the Kansas City Chiefs, and Chris Jones wins immediately on the inside. And Jordan recognizes that Jones wins, and then he has the ability, just raw athleticism, to run away from Chris Jones and then pick up the first down on the play. And some of these quarterbacks that don't have that mobility, I don't know, like they probably just don't escape it. It's a sack for Chris Jones. But Jordan has enough mobility in those situations. Somebody gets through clean, especially if it's a defensive tackle, he can run away, pick up a first down, and it ends up, instead of being a sack, it ends up being a positive play. He has underrated mobility. There are a couple of big time runs that he had through the course of the season. And I do think it's something that he could potentially utilize a little bit more. I'm not necessarily asking for it because I think the best quarterbacks play from within the pocket, and that should still be his goal. And it clearly wants to be his goal. And as time goes on, you get slower, the legs wear down. So the quicker he can learn how to be a pure pocket passer, the better. But I do think it's something that he could use at his disposal a bit more. And I think overall, again, it's a very underrated mobility. Number seven, He became much more comfortable with the pocket and maneuvering within the pocket as the season went along. There were times early where he would maybe abandon it a little bit early and try to get out. And as the season went along, he felt so comfortable playing within the pocket. There's a video that was just posted of him working out with Justin Fields recently, and he's working on that footwork, and you can see it. And the beautiful thing of it is it looks so insanely smooth, but that's what you saw in games. Earlier in the year, a little bit more choppy, a little bit more nervous. As the season went along, man, he had a great feel for the pocket. And go to that Dontavian Wicks touchdown against the Cowboys. Not, you know, he backed up enough or whatever, but just understanding everything that he needs to do and then getting depth on that drop because he knew blitzers were coming and then throwing it over the top. You know, early in the year, I don't know, he may have tried to bounce that outside or you know, to try to scramble away, and it wouldn't have worked. And that is such a huge thing for young quarterbacks to kind of get under their belt, is understanding, hey, I need to be able to play within the pocket. I've got to be able to distribute, and I've got to take some business decision throws. And that was one of the great things that was on his college tape, is he had no issue standing in the pocket and taking a hit in order to deliver a throw. And he showed that on multiple occasions last year as well. But in order to even be in that situation, you have to be willing to stand up tall in the pocket and maneuver around within it so you can get your throws off. And he had no fear playing within the pocket, especially as the season went along, got completely better at it. And that's going to be something that serves him so incredibly well, you know, very near in the future, but certainly down the road as well. All right, number eight, this offense got at its best when it started to keep it a little bit more simple. Now, this might seem contradictory, because before I said the offense didn't look so good because it had the training wheels on still. And I thought that Matt needed to take the training wheels off. And that is true. I think there were too many screens, too many pop passes, too many just, you know, quick little throws that, you know, maybe tried to just make it so that the offense wasn't fun and in rhythm. I'll put it that way. So that, really the latter, wasn't really in rhythm. But what I saw when this offense was really at its best, and when Jordan was at its best, when it kept the offense simple, quick, easy routes, Jordan gets the ball out of his hands, and you utilize these playmakers to allow them to run after the catch. And then all of a sudden, it was Jordan was getting in a rhythm. The offense was getting in a rhythm. And you hit some throws underneath, and now you get maybe a play action to hit one deeper. You get the running game going within it. And now, finally, at the end of the year, and you know, specifically second half of the year, you start seeing a legitimate rhythm to both Jordan and this offense. But it was really a more simplified approach, not a crackerjack, easy, we're going to try to do smoke and mirrors type of approach, but a simple, easy offense that kind of mirrored a Kyle Shanahan style offense. And we know that his entire offense is Shanahan and McVay influenced. I get it. But this was more of like, hey, we have Kittle, Juszczyk, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. We've got all these guys. We don't need the quarterback to do a bunch of crazy stuff. Just get it in their hands and let them cook. And that's what Green Bay's offense looked like when it was really at its best down the stretch of, we've got all these options. We've got all these playmakers. You can't cover all of them. Jordan will find the open one. He'll distribute and they'll go make a play. And that's when the offense and Jordan, in my opinion, really took off. And number nine goes hand in hand with it, is he became a much better distributor slash point guard as the season went along. He became somebody that, like I said, got the ball out of his hands quickly more often than not, didn't allow pressure to come, just found the open guy, ripped it to him. Might have been 5 or 6 yards, but it just kept everything moving. It kept everything in rhythm. And that's when, again, things really, really took off. Is it was simple. They took the training wheels off. He was allowed to throw where he wanted to throw. And he became a much better distributor. And it went hand in hand with the development of the wide receivers and the tight ends and him trusting them more, the wide receivers getting better, the tight ends getting better. And all of a sudden you've got all these weapons everywhere and Jordan can distribute, be that point guard, get the ball in their hands, and they can do more of the heavy lifting. All right. Number 10, he showed big time playability and big time throws all throughout the season. Ad lib plays, dominant down the field throws, like a little bit of everything, but he had the playmaking ability from pretty much day one. He had the ability to make big time throws. throws against the Buccaneers in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. We can go on and on about some of the high-end ridiculous throws that he made through the course of the season. I posted some on Twitter in the middle of last week, but those were all there. And when we start putting together like the case for like why you pay Jordan Love so much money, it's because what do we talk about? He didn't have any catastrophically bad games. He kept them in the vast majority of the games. Some games they won because of him. He has big time throw ability, ad lib ability, playmaking ability, above average scrambling ability. There's a lot of things that he has in his favor. And that's why you pay him a big contract. And that's why you keep him as the face of your franchise. But all of those big time throws were definitely there. Now he needs to convert on more of them. That goes without saying, but he had the ability to make them. And especially some of the ad lib stuff was super, super impressive. Number 11, the accuracy still needs to improve. And yes, his completion percentage got better as the season progressed, but his accuracy at times was still left, you were left wanting more. And that's not the worst thing, because I think he has room for growth. But there are plays that are completions that it's not going directly to the receiver or the running back or the tight end in stride, where they have to adjust for it or jump high for it or go low for it. Like, I want to see him hit those in rhythm a little bit more. And I still think there's two where there's also times they have the ability, or Jordan has the ability for an open wide receiver, and he just misses them clean. A lot of deep balls that way, a lot of outs that way. He's got to be able to hit that with a little bit better consistency and be a little bit more accurate, even within the completions that he has. And yes, he got better, but I still think there's a pretty solid step for him to take, which is a pretty scary thing to think about for opposing defenses, because he was already pretty darn good. And if his accuracy even gets better, man, how amazing would that be for Green Bay? Number 12, his clutch play was very, very interesting through the course of the year. So let's kind of go through it. Falcons game, down by one, 57 seconds left. They go four and out. Now he did make a gorgeous, gorgeous throw on fourth down. Toure couldn't hold on to it. There was a legal shift on offense anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. But again, this is not to say that the clutch stat is like all on Jordan. It's the entire offense, right? But Falcons down one, 57 seconds left. They go four and out. Packers lose. Then you have the Saints game where you're down 17 in the fourth quarter. The offense puts up 18 consecutive points, including a 9-play, 80-yard drive that results in a touchdown from Jordan Love to Romeo Doubs to complete the comeback and get the win. 18-point comeback. That's good. That seems like a good thing. And then Raiders, 1:55 left, down four. Love throws an interception. Broncos, down two, 3 minutes and 50 seconds left. Love throws an interception. Steelers, down four, 59 seconds left. Love throws an interception. Then you get the Chargers game. You're down three with 5 minutes left. He leads a 75-yard touchdown drive for a go-ahead score. The Giants, he's down by five. There's 3.5 minutes left. He led a 9-play, 36-yard touchdown drive that was capped by a Love to Heath touchdown. Now, the defense ended up blowing that game, but that's not the offense's fault. They went down in what should have been probably a game-winning touchdown drive. It's just unfortunate the defense couldn't hold up their side of things. The Panthers, tie game, 4:05 remaining. He goes 9 plays, 61 yards for a game-winning field goal drive. And then 49ers down three, 1:07 left, tries to get it to Christian Watson, rolling to his right, throws all the way across his body, and it results in an interception, Dre Greenlaw for the 49ers. Season over. So he had 9 clutch opportunities. He came up with 4 of them, meaning he put his team ahead in 4 of them. However, he also had 4 of the drives end in interceptions, which clearly is not going to get you over the hump and actually win that game. So a bit of a mixed bag. Not terrible, 4-5, theoretically from what he did. I'm not saying that the team's record there, but 4 really good ones, 5 not so good ones. Something I think he can still get better at, but not terrible for a first time starter. Number 13, I think there's still so much room for improvement for Jordan, which I'll say one more time is a scary thought for opposing defenses. I think some of the completion percentage and accuracy can go up from here. I think he's going to have a opportunity to play the whole year like he did in the second half of last year. And that will improve his numbers, his statistics, everything, I don't want to say exponentially, but in a pretty significant way going into this season. All right, what else we got here? Last but not least, I think. Yeah. I just want to add one more thing. When I say there's room for improvement, That's not just with Jordan. I think that's this offense as a whole. I think these wide receivers are still learning Jordan. Jordan's still learning the wide receivers and the tight ends. And just there's so much meat on this bone. There's the sky's the limit for how talented this offense can be. And I think there is a lot of room for growth, even above and beyond what they did in some of those best games last year. I really do. I think they can even be more dynamic than that, which is, again, a scary thought for opposing defenses. Last but not least, I'll say this in a way that is not meant to be negative in any way, so please don't take it that way. I thought the beginning of the year, even though we went over the grades, right? Plus 0.6 in the first eight games, plus 16.10 in the remainder of the season. I didn't feel like the beginning of the year for Jordan. I'm just talking Jordan here. I'm not talking the offense. I'm talking Jordan. I did not believe that Jordan was maybe as bad, or like the offense and him specifically were as bad in those first 8 weeks. Like I said, it was average to solid play. It was certainly not bad. I thought it was better than people kind of have revisionist history of like, oh, he was not good at all those first 8 weeks. He did a lot of really good stuff. And I think he learned a lot during that time frame. And then I will also add on top of that the other way. I didn't think outside of there were a few games towards the end, but I didn't think like that second half of the year, I thought there was still a lot of growth for Jordan to do. I really do. So that part wasn't quite as epic as people make it out to me, because I feel like it's like the two halves of the season. That Steelers game is kind of the line in the sand, where the early in the season, not so great, and the second half is like, oh my God, he's an MVP. I didn't think the end was quite that good, and I think the beginning was quite that bad. I still thought the end was better. I still thought the end was really good, but I think there's still so much room for Jordan to improve, and that's what I saw even towards the end of the season when he was still playing pretty freaking well. And then I'll just kind of end by saying this. The three games that I really saw, I think, peak Jordan Love were the Minnesota, Chicago, and Dallas three-game stretch at the end of the year. And remember, Minnesota, Dallas, they have to have those wins. In order to make the playoffs, they have to win both of those games. I know neither team were good, and I know neither team had anything to play for at that point, but they had to have those wins. And of course, you have to win in Dallas, or you're eliminated from the playoffs. In those three games combined, Love was 67 of 86, 77.9% completion percentage, 77.9% completion percentage, 844 yards, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions, took only one sack, had a rushing touchdown, did have one fumble. I mean, just un-freaking believable numbers. Minnesota, Chicago, Dallas, that three-game stretch, completed 78% of his passes, basically. It's unbelievable. That was the really, truly fun stretch to watch. And I'll just end again finally with this. To me, he is the franchise quarterback. There's still a lot of room for growth, and that is a good thing. He has not stagnated. He has not reached his peak. There are still significant steps for him to get even better from what we saw from what was a really epic second half of last year. That's going to do it for me today. Hope you enjoyed this Jordan Love deep dive. I know I certainly did. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Bradad, Brandon Pauletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Dan Guestford, Peter Ataka, and Caleb Cookster. See you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, Go Pack Go.